Hello, everyone. This is Dark Journalist. Tonight, I have a special interview for you with Oxford scholar Dr. Joseph Farrow. Now, we've taken the missing UFO scientist story all the way up to the White House, who recently released some UFO file documents. Tonight, with Dr. Farrell, we'll go even deeper to the role that Rocket City, Huntsville, Alabama, the new home for Space Command, plays in all of this. Please join us now. You can't be behind that curve. You have to be ahead of it. So what's coming in relation to the UFO file and the threats that they've been dangling out there when they were rolling out threats during this whole period during COVID, when people were locked into their homes and had to be on the internet or watching TV, whatever it was, they started to roll out all of this TTSA junk with the UFO threat thing through Fox and all the rest of it, showing the Tic Tac, which was highly questionable in terms of UFO footage, in my opinion, by a long shot, and also had been around since 2007. It had already been floated on YouTube in 2007. So they're not even good releases. They just expect, as Alan Dulles did back in the CIA days, saying, don't worry, the American public doesn't read. Well, some of us do, and we know how to study this thing. The danger is being behind the curve, because when you're in the soup, like with COVID, then you're really in it. And I would say the missing scientists are the canary in the coal mine around the UFO subject, just like the missing and dead holistic doctors were the canary in the coal mine around the COVID op. And once you're in it, forget it. There's all kinds of things that are taking place. There's lockdowns, you know, there's things you can't do, you're closing restaurants, there are all sorts of things that go on that impact society. You can't wait till you're in the soup. And this is something that I think many of your listeners have learned over the years. You have to be ahead of that curve. And one of the things we've been able to do on my show is be able to be ahead of the subject so that people coming to me now are like, oh yeah, you know, I remember when you were talking about this 5 years ago. Now they're rolling it out and it seems like a dream that they're rolling it out with the threat. And they're even having people from NORAD and the continuity of government program starting to talk.
And we were able to predict it all, which is we see the pre-programming. All right, Dark Journalist joins us. Written for the Wall Street Journal, you name it, author, top filmmaker, award-winning darkjournalist.com, Daniel List, Dark Journalist on X. I wanted to get him on because he popped in for 20 minutes yesterday, but he has more time to absorb this data dump. Misha Kaku and others are on Fox saying the biggest thing ever, full disclosure is coming. You know, to me, it was a nothing burger, a bunch of old videos, a few new ones, Tic Tacs, some new documents that were interesting, a shot of a stretcher with a body bag on it. Is there an alien in there? So Daniel List, a lot to unpack here. Great to have you since we talked 24 hours ago. What do we know now?
Fantastic to be here, Alex. And I'll tell you this, you're right on the money with this, because what's going on is they released stuff that basically is the dividing line between people who knew anything about the UFO file and people who knew nothing about it. And the people who knew nothing about it thought it was a release. But in fact, it is very, very dominated by stuff that's already been in the public domain. The videos they released were, some of them were provably false, and they did that on purpose. They're leaving this wide open, but they were able to create the buzz while not actually giving the public anything discernible in the way of real links back to the past. What I noticed was a big emphasis in there was this Apollo 17, you know, the sightings that they had on Apollo 17, and I put up some posts that we'll look at later. But the deal is this. Immediately after that, Jared Isaacman came out and started talking about how the last time we were on the moon was Apollo 17. So the coordinating here with NASA, and NASA, of course, holds the largest bank, the entire tranche of the UFO file images from the satellites and all the rest of it, along with the National Reconnaissance Office. That's not the stuff that we got to see in the releases that were going on there. And it's very interesting because one of the things that the Trump administration did is they took Victory Day from World War II, and they used that as the day for this non-UFO disclosure release day. But certainly that's, you know, again, attaching the war aspect to the UFO aspect is not good. When they did the Department of War and they said war.gov/UFO to get all the documents, that wasn't good. So, you know, they're attaching this war idea to the alien file and to the UFO file aspect. That's where the UFO threat comes in, the total opposite of real disclosure. Real disclosure would show that the CIA, the NRO, and the NGA have been holding back these files and manipulating them, moving them through offices in the United States government so that the public could never get at them through normal journalistic, you know, inquiries and the types of things you would do, like FOIAs and all the rest of it. So we're in a very squeezed situation where Trump is trying to now retain that UFO file back under the executive branch, but is prevented from doing it because the hold of those agencies, especially the Central Intelligence Agency, is beyond. This is something many presidents realized once they got in the door. The CIA holds that power. And what do you do to get it back? You move in different ways to move the power back under executive control. In the case of the UFO file, you have another group working between the aerospace defense contractors and the Central Intelligence Agency. And we have to remember certain things, that there may be agencies that have been created out of the black budget that we, the public, don't know anything about. This is the core aspect, really, because we had the National Reconnaissance Office created in 1963, actually under the JFK administration. We didn't find out about it until 3 decades later. So the question is, what is the agency that's operating now that is managing the UFO file and this disclosure while preparing the public for this UFO threat? And we don't even know the name of the agency. Well, we need to get to who that agency is. And the way I've identified it is through the X-Protect group and the people and the sources in the background. The thing with X-Protect is you never get to see the members up front. You're not going to see them in front of a microphone, but you can see the people that they push up to the microphones. And most often those people are counterintelligence people promoting a UFO threat that we need to fight back against. Now, Trump was very honest. One of the things when he was talking about the Golden Dome and saying, well, this is Star Wars 2. In fact, this is SDI that Reagan wanted to do, which was a gigantic missile defense system in the 1980s. And then supposedly when the Cold War happened, that all went away. Well, no, it went underground. And this is what took place. The SDI program continued on. And now Trump is saying we have the technology because you've invested in it, in the public, after all, for the past 4 decades. And we could fight off the incoming alien invasion with the $300 billion boondoggle of the Golden Dome. Now, you can say there might even be an argument for the Golden Dome. I'm not saying it's even, you know, a project that shouldn't happen, but it should be very clear what it is. That is a UFO defense grid. No question about it. And even Trump, as I said, has put this across. Joseph, it's fantastic to have you back.
Thanks for having me back.
I can't believe we've covered more in the pre-interview than the interview.
Oh, if so many people things could only going. Know. Yeah, go ahead.
We have so many things going on. And I have to say, every headline after headline, I keep thinking it's right up Farrell's alley. You know, it's right up your
and
alley.
If it is, Daniel, the world really is going to hell in a handbasket. Given all the weird stuff I write about. These people are tripping.
You know it. Next, you're going to have, you know, Adam Schiff coming out and saying the cosmic war is on. Congressman Schiff.
Oh, please, no. I don't need endorsements from that crowd. Really dumb.
Nancy Pelosi, special guest, ancient aliens.
No. So you get these Democrats. Pelosi.
No. We have these Democrats, these Republicans now, and they want to talk about their weird version of UFOs, Joseph. And this set off a whole, so I'll set it up this way. There was a process that was set off by President Trump in February, and we knew this was coming.
Yes.
But it was actually tripped off by Obama, who was sitting in a podcast and said, well, there are aliens, but they aren't at Area 51. Very strange thing for him to say. Well, mm-hmm. Trump gets unnerved by that. He had apparently a speech ready to go out in July about all this. And he said, you know what, I'm going to get in there and I'm releasing all these files. And, you know, this whole thing is coming out. I've instructed the Department of War, hello, Department of Defense, to release all this information and to coordinate with agencies. Mm-hmm. Right after that, Joseph, General McCaslin disappears, as you well know. And you've done extraordinary work on this. All the work I did on the missing scientist starts getting picked up, believe it or not, folks, by the mainstream media, CNN and Rolling Stone. And they're rolling in all of these things about the coverage that we did on Lorero and all these other cases.
Yes.
And this becomes the missing scientist thing, goes right up to the desk of the president, who comments on it and says, we'll get to the bottom of it. A week and a half later, his FBI director and others start throwing wet water on it and saying, no, we don't think there's a connection and all the rest. But this phase that we're in, May 8th, which is Victory Day, of course, they release this weird version of these UFO files, and they include some, you know, videos and documents. Now, the majority of experts, including like the Black Vault and all these other people who really get into the document side, say, we've seen most of these documents before. We've seen most of these videos before. So this is kind of a non-disclosure. What is going on in the background there with this whole wave around the UFO side? And then in the background, we hear about the Golden Dome, which is really cover for a UFO defense grid.
Well, to be honest with you, Daniel, if you look at the UFO thing, the Epstein files thing, the missing scientists thing, and you know, this crazy war with Iran, all of it to me is somehow connected. And part of the major connection is a lot of it is being used as distraction. And even in the process of let's pick the Iran war just as an example of what I mean by distraction.
And disaster.
And total disaster. I mean, you know.
What kind of a war is that? We're going to go in there and blow them up. Then we're going to come back and say they surrendered. And they're going to say, we didn't surrender. Yes, they did surrender.
They did surrender. The war is over. No, it's not over. Yeah, we successfully took out their nuclear program, but we need to go back in there and complete it. You know, nothing makes
this
any sense.
This is making George W. Bush look competent. I mean, how do you do that?
Yes, it's nuclear, Mr. President.
Nuclear, but, indeed.
Yeah, nuclear. But anyway... what I mean by distraction is we've been proffered a bunch of explanations for, and the goalpost and the explanations keep shifting for this Iran thing. And that is part of the planned distraction right there. As far as I can tell, this war was really all about de-dollarization, because now everybody else is up the creek without an energy supply, except we can supply you, but you're going to have to pay in dollars. It's about de-dollarization, at least in a major aspect. So I'm looking at all this stuff with the ufology, with the UFO files release, and I'm with you. It's a big nothing burger. We've been here before. We've seen all these films. We've read all these documents. You haven't released anything new. You've not said anything new. And this is coming at a time when we have all of these weird disappearances of scientists. You and I have talked about Dr. Lodero, General McCasland, and you know.
And that, all the Huntsville scientists. We're going to get to Huntsville,
because, yeah, I think that's a key part of this mystery. But just look at McCasland for a minute here. How in the name of sense are you so lax in security that you essentially allow a general, it appears to me, to disappear himself?
Yes.
Specifically a general with the access to classified information that he had.
Mm-hmm.
And if he did disappear himself, then why aren't you able to find him? As far as I recall, in those classified programs, the government chips you.
Mm-hmm.
Did he burrow the chip out? Did he have it surgically removed? And if he didn't remove himself from the situation and someone else did, that's an even worse security nightmare. So my first problem here is, where's the security and why is it stripped?
Yes.
You know, and when we say security stripping, I'm thinking, okay, Security was stripped around Charlie Kirk.
Mm-hmm.
Security was stripped around President Trump.
Yes.
You know, so we're looking
at... You can take that pattern all the way back to the JFK assassination.
All the way back to the JFK. Yeah. Well, for that matter, all the way back to Abraham Lincoln.
Yes.
So, you know, we're looking at these patterns, and all of this makes no sense. And in the middle of all this, we've got all these missing scientists. Lutero, I think, being the overlooked key component here, because what was Lutero's specialty? Plasma, folks.
Yes. Yes. And you and I did something very early on Lurero and the strangeness, and this wasn't in his bio. This is what's so interesting. Mm-hmm. I saw this funeral kind of tribute, and they said Dr. Lurero did so love his neutron star merger research. And we touched on it just briefly, but that idea of the kind of black hole.
Yes.
Research and just taking a little bit of that and recreating it in the lab represents a huge energy overhaul. And I mean, it could literally revolutionize what we conceive of as energy production.
Well, this is yes, this is the key missing component here. And I mentioned this in our private run-up before we began the recording, and I want to do so again because I think it's deeply connected to the pattern of the Huntsville missing Huntsville period. Let's add the missing scientists, but it's Huntsville period.
Yeah.
I have a blog coming up this week about Eric Weinstein, the mathematician and physicist that, you know, you've seen interviewed in various places. Yes. And he makes a point in an article that I reference in the blog, and I reference the article precisely because it's Weinstein that I draw attention to. Weinstein makes the point that what's missing in ufology is the physics.
Mm-hmm.
And what does he mean by that? Well, he means by that we can have all the engineers and all the materials scientists and so on that we want. But until you can explain the physics behind these things, you've got nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that is a very prescient comment to make, particularly in the context of the missing scientists, some of whom are scientists. Dr. Lutero.
Okay? Yes.
He's the genuine article, and his specialty happens to be in a field that I think is intimately related to the UFO.
Yes.
We have other cases of scientists that we don't hear much about, but one of the things that Weinstein is pointing out is, okay, and let's remember what Weinstein's specialty is. He's involved in higher dimensional mathematics. He's trying to get to a higher dimensional mathematical expression of a unified field theory. You know, this is a game that's been going on since Albert Einstein and general relativity and Kaluza-Klein and Bakla-Blavatsky and all of these physicists that have been involved in higher dimensional mathematical unified field theories. It's been going on for at least the past 9 decades to, you know, a couple decades before World War II. So it's a long quest. And Weinstein is again drawing attention to the fact that we don't yet have the physics work. And I took that as kind of a jumping off point because we've had little indicators, Daniel. We've had indicators. We have those stories about Ben Rich, which to me, you know, the former director of the Lockheed Skunk Works.
Yes.
To me, those stories are saying the same thing. This is what I'm really getting at here. Those stories about Ben Rich are saying the same thing that Eric Weinstein is saying. And that means that the stories, to me, have some credence. Mm. They're not just stories. We now have a credentialed mathematician that is saying pretty much the same thing that those stories that Ben Rich are told about Ben Rich is saying. One of them is, you recall, that Ben Rich allegedly said, we found an error in the equations.
Right.
And now we can take ET home.
Right.
And you know me. I think, okay, whose equations? About what?
Yes.
And I'm thinking, okay, let's put all these clues together. Missing scientists, Ben Rich, Eric Weinstein. what do we got?
The early fundamentals that they came out with publicly were flawed. Intentionally. Yeah.
Maybe intentionally. So I'm thinking, okay, if there's an error in the equations, did Ben Rich sit down and plow through this little known discussion between Einstein and Levi-Civita? Maybe that's it. I don't
Interesting.
Know.
Interesting. Okay.
But what I'm getting at here is everything that I'm telling you about this little known dispute in science is about what? It's about gravity. General relativity is basically Einstein's geometrization of the theory of gravity. That's basically what it is. And Ben Rich is saying, okay, we found the error. Now let's go to another point that I think deals directly with Professor Weinstein's comment and critique that, well, we've got to deal with the physics.
Interesting.
Can
you bring us into Nazi physics?
Sure.
From there, because yes. I'm interested in that split, because I know that you've said before that the Nazis were like, oh, we're going to throw out relativity and we're going to basically have an open envelope for whatever you want to check out. And so we had Kammler saying to all his scientists, really go out on a limb and find out what this is all about.
Yeah, Kammler set his scientists free from Nazi Party ideology, and that included the Nazi Party proscription against "quote unquote" Jewish physics, meaning relativity.
All right,
you get all of these very interesting papers being published in the interwar period, including several papers by Albert Einstein on various approaches to unified field theories. I talk about these in some of my books. One of them being distant parallelism, another one being torsion-based unified field theories. You've got Kaluza-Klein and on we go. Well, the interesting thing about many of these theories is precisely the fact that they do have some sort of connection to torsion in some form or fashion. And then on top of it all, we've got Walter Gerlach, the Nazi physicist that's actually in charge of not only their atom bomb project, but he's also kind of the guy that's ultimately sitting on top of the Bell project. Why? Well, Walter Gerlach is not a nuclear physicist in the standard sense at all. His real interest prior to the war and during the war is gravity and rotating systems. Okay, this is why he's involved, you know, with the Stern-Gerlach experiment, trying to figure out the spin moment of particles before the war. So in other words, this is his whole thing.
And so you have that fundamental working in 1940s Germany. You fast forward to December 65 when the Kecksburg crash happens.
Yeah.
You've got 20 years of development in between.
You've got 20 years of development, and there's a fundamental thing that connects the two. In the Nazi Bells case, according to Witkowski, again, using his detail, The bell, when it was tested underground, it was housed in a facility that was lined with ceramic brick and rubber mats. And after each test, the rubber mats had to be taken out and burned, and the whole room scrubbed down. Okay,
this is that gamma effect again. There's
bingo.
Yeah, yeah.
Ceramic brick. The Kecksburg bell, according to... what's the guy's name? Not Kenneth Arnold. The guy in Pennsylvania Stan Gordon.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
That has investigated the Kecksburg Bell. Well, he pursued the story all the way up to the bell having been, or the Kecksburg acorn having been withdrawn from Kecksburg and apparently driven to Wright-Patterson Air Base because he interviewed a man by the name of Myron, who was working in a local construction company, and the airbase calls up the construction company and asks for a delivery of about 3,000 ceramic bricks.
This is like the Roswell "Give Me the Child" coffin.
Yep,
bingo. Story.
So the guy delivers the ceramic bricks, and he's told to deliver them to a certain hangar, and he goes in the hangar, and behind a silk screen, he sees this acorn-shaped object. So, you know, and that's, by the way, that's on the cover of my SS Brotherhood of the Bell book.
Right.
So it's Stan Gordon's
idea.
So the details, again, suggest that there's something going on in North America that has to do with the Nazi Bell.
Yeah.
The bad news is the Kecksburg acorn was tracked on its flight path, and I reproduced this little map in SS Brotherhood of the Bell. It was tracked from Canada, from British Columbia, down across the upper Midwestern Plains states, down over Ohio, and in Ohio, it apparently stops for a very short period, adjusts course, and then turns, you know, makes an acute angle turn into Pennsylvania, where it crashes outside of Kecksburg.
Incredible. And so totally intelligent design, intelligence operated. Yeah.
And our military is there within 2 hours to pick the thing up and cart it away.
Yeah. They know the experiment's gone wrong.
They know the experiment. They know something. It's either gone wrong or they took over control or something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
When you say it comes in from Canada, where do you think its origin?
British Columbia.
Okay.
This is the part of the story I haven't talked about ever publicly because I have not been able to verify any of it. But there are stories coming out of British Columbia. I know the town. Okay, I'm not going to say what it is, nor where it is. But
You're saying there's German scientists up there.
There are German communities in British Columbia. And there are stories, they're rare, and you have to dig for them in the UFO lore.
Interesting.
But there are stories about things going on in the skies at night in British Columbia. And there just happened to be a lot of Germans living nearby, yeah?
Incredible. Well, Joseph, that's fascinating. When you get to the that bit about Kecksburg, I just want to say the first people on the scene are average townspeople.
Yes.
And they go up close to it and they say it's glowing and it seems like it's almost spitting fire or something like that. And they see these hieroglyphs on it. I go back again to the Roswell case and the hieroglyphs on the Roswell craft. And it's interesting because, again, you have something, there's something that occurs which is unplanned for, and they have to roll in the cover up aspect and get rid of it. But it lands there. It's in the heart of the public. When you see, you know, you did a whole thing dedicated to the Nazi involvement in the Roswell case. Mm-hmm. But the group that you see still operating, because it's 2 years after the end of the war, the group that you see operating this advanced craft, if it's not extraterrestrial and it's this Nazi technology taken to the next degree, where do you think they're operating from?
Now or then?
Then, in, say, 47, when they crashed the Roswell.
Well, in 47, there are several centers that they're operating from. One would be in and around El Paso, Texas, and Ciudad Juarez, and over the border in Mexico. They're certainly operating throughout the Andean chain from Ecuador all the way down to Chile. They're certainly present in Argentina, particularly around Patagonia and Terra del Fuego. They're certainly present in places inside of Brazil, Paraguay, Bolivia, to a lesser extent, Uruguay. Basically, the only South American countries that you would not find them would in huge numbers would be Colombia and Venezuela. They're operating in Taiwan.
Right.
They are operating in Indochina. That's key. They are operating in Spain, Austria, especially in and around Vienna. They are operating in southern Sweden, in and around Gothenburg and Malmö. In other words, places in Sweden that are closely connected to the Swedish armaments industry, Bofors.
Oh, yes. Yes. You have the weird ghost rockets.
Definitely.
That's even pre-Roswell.
Yeah, that's definitely pre-Roswell. So those are the places they're operating from. And I would add to that, in the United States, in addition to El Paso, they're in places like Huntsville. You know, we haven't even got there yet, but they're in Huntsville.
Right. This is how we're going to go directly.
This is how we're getting there.
Into Rocket City. Yeah.
But yeah, they're definitely operating in these places. And it's not as if the Americans aren't unaware that something's going on right under their noses, because Linda Hunt published that wonderful book where she pointed out that U.S. Army counterintelligence was looking at all this, you know, all these Nazis,
yes,
and what they were doing, and came to the conclusion, well, they've duplicated their entire chain of command and taken positions in the chain of command that were essentially duplicating what they were doing inside of Nazi Germany. We're just paying for it.
That's incredible. Joseph, when we take the Nazis over here, we have different locations for them. So we have the paperclip program. There's a gigantic connection with paperclip and some of the people show up later around things like the Kennedy assassination, et cetera, like John McCloy and others. But when we take them, the excuse supposedly for bringing them to Huntsville is, oh, it's the climate they're familiar with. Why do they take them to Huntsville, and why does Huntsville become Rocket City? And of course, we know that right now Space Command under the Trump administration, the first Trump administration tried to move it from Colorado to Huntsville and failed. But now they did it again, and here we go. It's on. They're moving the Space Command directly from Colorado into Huntsville, Alabama. Why Huntsville? And what's gone on there? What's the connection with the paperclip origins of this story?
Well, Daniel.
How's that for an opener? There you go.
I couldn't have put it better myself. Doff my hat. Is there a connection that connects all of that? Space Command. Why Huntsville? Yes, there is. UFOs, paperclip, yes. Nazis. The answer to all five of those questions, Daniel, is two words. Kurt Davis.
Davis. Wow.
Davis. Yeah. Dr. Kurt Davis was a paperclip Nazi. He was a very close associate of Dr. von Braun, because you can look at photographs of Kennedy and von Braun and Curtis LeMay.
Yes.
That era. And very oftentimes the scientist that's sitting next to Dr. von Braun, who has a big Mentura scar running down his face, is Dr. Kurt Davis.
Yes. Okay.
One of the paperclip Nazis. Now, here's the problem with Dr. Davis. If you don't know his resume, let's tick off a few interesting points.
Yes, absolutely. Please
on
do.
On the curriculum vitae. Dr. Davis was, first of all, not a rocket scientist at all. His specialty was, here it comes, folks, high voltage pressure and measurement, and plasma.
Oh, wow.
That's the guy's specialty.
What is he doing in Rocket City?
You might be asking yourself, in Rocket City, much less as, here comes a little second point on the curriculum vitae to tick off. He was the senior flight director at Cape Canaveral during all of Project Apollo. He, in other words, is the guy pulling all the shots for the moon landings.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He's right in the heart of it.
He's not in the heart of it. He's planning it. He's coordinating it.
Amazing.
So we've got a Nazi. And by the way, when I say Nazi, I'm not saying Nazi like Wernher von Braun Nazi. Not a good Nazi.
Right, yeah.
Because Dr. Davis had been denounced by United States Army Counterintelligence in 19, here comes that wonderful year, 47.
Right.
For having been involved in denouncing a colleague of his in 1942 to the Gestapo.
That's right.
Well, who's the colleague he denounced to the Gestapo? And why is the United States Army Counterintelligence reopening the case? Well, maybe this has something to do with it. Tick off third and fourth points on the curriculum vitae of Dr. Davis. The fellow he denounced to the Gestapo was Richard Kramer. And nothing came of the case because a physicist by the name of Dr. Abraham Azal, who, odd name for Nazi physicist involved in secret research to have, wrote a letter to the Gestapo demanding the release of Dr. Kramer.
Mm.
On the letterhead of the Allgemeine Elektrizitätsgesellschaft, and with the authorization of Reichsmarschall Hermann Goering.
In other words,
this is not your average scientist you fellows in the Gestapo are arresting here.
Right. The connections go all the way up to Goering.
Goering,
and, yeah.
Of all people.
Wow.
And by the way, in that, it's that document that says Dr. Kramer is working on projects that are Kriegsentscheidend, decisive for the war.
Oh, right.
And that's the only place, as Witkowski points out, he's got this document in his book. That's the only place in all of the literature where the Nazis use that technical term in a classified project. In other words, the project is so highly classified, way beyond their atom bomb. Okay. So in other words, it's like Dr. Sarbacher in the UFO literature, who's well known for, and the Canadian William, what's his name?
Wilbur Smith.
Smith, that said that Sarbacher told him that the UFO subject is classified higher than the hydrogen.
Right.
So here again, we have the same phenomenon, the same pattern. So Kramer was denounced by Davis to the Gestapo. And Kramer is working for a project that's decisive for the war for the Allgemeine Elektrizitätsgesellschaft. In other words, he's working on the Bell because that's the company that built the Bell.
Do you think that Davis is trying to eliminate the competition there?
It could be. But what that also indicates is Davis is involved in the Bell project.
Oh, right.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yeah. Okay, got ding, it. Ding, ding. He's on the Bell. Yes.
He's on the Bell. Kramer's on the Bell. And now for the final little thing in the Dr. Davis curriculum vitae that we can check off is that when he retires, by the way, he lives in Huntsville.
Yes.
Where, by the way, von Braun also retires to go to work for Fairchild Industries.
Yes, I want to get to Fairchild as well.
It's during that time period that von Braun gave that wonderful little interview in Time magazine that appeared in that little, little column thing I remember reading as a kid. Anyway,
Which is absolutely explosive.
Oh, totally.
Yeah. Yeah.
Totally.
We'll have you recite it from memory here.
Well, I'll try as best as I can. But anyway, Davis ends up in Huntsville, Nevada, in Huntsville, Alabama. And when he retired, just before he retires, for the last, let's say, 3 to 5 years of his career at NASA, guess what he's in charge of? NASA's UFO desk.
That's it. Yeah. Wow.
Ding, ding, ding. Now,
yes.
Add it all together. You've got a Bell scientist who is a plasma physicist, a specialist in high voltage pressure and measurement, that is the senior flight director for Project Apollo, and who is a Nazi.
Yes. He gets us to the moon.
He's got the scar to prove it, you know, and the monocle. He's got all of these credentials, and he ends up in charge of the UFO desk. And then,
I mean, that aspect is almost the most incredible bullet point on that whole list.
Yeah,
because how do you put him in charge of the UFO file at that juncture? It's very unusual.
Well, you don't put him in charge of it if in fact he has had nothing to do with things that aren't related to it.
Yes.
that's my point here. You know.
So he's in Huntsville. So Huntsville is the headquarters for the UFO file director, the head of the desk. Huntsville's the headquarters for Von Braun, who, because of the interview, is kind of booted out of NASA, and they throw him into Fairchild.
Right, right. And it ends up being head of the Space Command. What better place to put head of Space Command than a nest of Nazis?
Yes. Let's talk about that for a moment, because when you get the command from the Trump administration to bring all this right up to modern times, and he says, I'm moving this from Colorado. We also know that there's a continuity of government NORAD piece there with that. So he's saying, no, Alabama, you know, I'm doing this. And he tried, and they rebuffed him heavily in the first term. He comes back and he does it. He gets it done. But then in the middle of all this phase of stories that we're talking about for 2026, where Trump says, I'm putting out the UFO file, Joseph, the scientists who are disappearing that are related to Huntsville become very, very apparent. And in fact, when I was doing the detailing on this, and I started with Amy Eskridge, who died in 2022 after founding the Institute for Exotic Science. Yes. And what's interesting is her dad was deeply, deeply involved in these projects for NASA.
Yeah.
But what was interesting is as I was going through the different scientists associated with this, and we talked about Ning Li and some others, a scientist working for NASA goes down in a plane with his whole family. This is back in April. This is how recent this is. His whole family, and they were all Huntsville. You know, he was the scientist, and he went down with his family in a plane crash. There are so many links through Huntsville, and I could detail them, but for the point of this, what is the connection here between the original paperclip taking over of, you know, and inventing this Rocket City? And, you know, Alabama is fantastic. I want to put this on the record. And Huntsville itself is quite remarkable. But I'm talking about it as a focal point of these activities. What is it that you see happening with these groups concentrating on that area in the first place, basically formulating a secret space headquarters very early on in the game through paperclip, and now graduated out to a point in 2026 where they're going to be the head of Space Command, and the apparently the scientists who were around in Huntsville who had access the same way that McCasland had access. And I want to mention that one of the secret space alumni who did a conference with us, Mark McClandish, he had given a speech in Huntsville only a month before he died under very mysterious circumstances again. So, again, we're kind of more aware on this track than we even want to be.
Well, look, I think I think several scenarios are possible here. And the problem is we just don't have enough information, at least at this juncture, to make any good prima facie guesses as to which of these scenarios are most likely. I can see the United States moving the Space Command from Colorado to Huntsville in an effort to keep tabs on whatever's going on there and whoever's really directing it. Or equally plausible, I can see that whoever's really directing it, and I have no difficulty in believing that at least my so-called Nazi or fascist international might still be very influential in doing these types of things. That they might have been the ones behind the move, just, you know, to assert raw power. I can see the deaths of some of these scientists as being either messages sent to the rest of them or punishment for straying too far off the reservation, or as means of keeping mouths shut.
Right.
Or this is one that I think has to be entertained in terms of the types of expertise that each of these missing people have been into. And that is to prevent them from talking to each other.
Oh, right.
And comparing notes. Because in projects like this, what you don't want are people able to compare notes and put it all together.
Interesting.
And Huntsville, if you're gonna coordinate let's just be very blunt. If you're gonna coordinate a worldwide secret space program, places like Huntsville are gonna be the places you're gonna do it from.
Yes.
Because you're gonna have to have a place where there is a collective of expertise able to evaluate analytically various situations as they arise.
Right.
You can't tell me that other countries don't have similar installations and institutions. So in other words, I'm looking at the missing scientists, the Huntsville thing, and all the patterns associated with it as being potentially indicative of any number of scenarios. Many of them saying that the United States is in the process of either losing control or has already lost control and is trying to regain control and so on.
Interesting. Yeah.
I'm in the regain control camp. Why? Well, to be blunt, the old adage is, well, why haven't we been back to the moon? Well, all of our German rocket scientists are dead. We just went back to the moon.
Right.
On whose rocket?
Yes.
And what nationality is he?
Mm-hmm.
And where is he from? And who did he have connections with? So let's go back for a moment to Kurt Davis.
You got South Africa in the mix immediately.
South Africa in the mix immediately. And let's remember something about South Africa and Israel. Because everybody says that South Africa and Israel got their bomb from us. Well, I think Israel got much of the material for its bomb from us. But the technological know-how, particularly in South Africa's case, didn't come from us. It came from Germany.
Oh, right.
Came from West Germany.
Interesting.
You know, people forget Germany. Before Angela Merkel dismantled their nuclear power plants, Germany was like Japan. It was a turnkey nuclear power.
Mm-hmm.
They could produce all the elements and parts for a bomb, and nobody would know it, and they could assemble it in 30 minutes.
Wow.
That's what you're dealing with.
Yeah.
Germany sold the entire nuclear fuel process to Brazil and Argentina in the 1970s. So, you know, this is, like it or not, folks, that's the reality.
Yeah, and they were fattening up their own kind of reserves, selling stuff off.
Yeah, and according to some people, Germany builds the warheads for the French nuclear deterrent. So, you know.
Right. So, it's like they're the heart of this.
Yeah, they're the heart of this, like it or not. You know, and by the way, where did Iran buy all their centrifuges from? Ding, ding, ding. You got it. And the same people that sold centrifuge technology to South Africa. Okay, there you go. So
that's very interesting. Yeah.
Well, let's go back to Davis then. After he finally retired from NASA, he became member of the board for that West German firm called OTRAG.
Yes.
Orbital Transport Raketen Aktiengesellschaft, Orbital Transport Rockets Incorporated.
So, okay. And don't you think that OTRAG becomes probably much more important?
Oh yeah.
Now, looking back on it, than we say with the knowledge we had 10 years ago, it wouldn't.
Oh, absolutely.
All those connections, yeah.
Absolutely.
The connections are now sort of the 100-pound, 800-pound gorillas out of the closet
Well, let's remember what Mikhail Gorbachev said about OTRAG. He was the one that brought OTRAG to everybody's attention in the West. We wouldn't be discussing it now, Daniel, if it hadn't been for Mikhail Gorbachev.
Okay? Well, that's interesting. Yeah.
Because otherwise, to listen to the Germans, all OTRAG was a defunct company that was trying to build out cheap rockets for, quick and cheap, easy launch facility technology. Think Elon Musk. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Well, that's all OTRAG was, and it went bankrupt.
SpaceX part one. Yeah.
Don't need to worry about it anymore. Don't even think. Well, not according to Mikhail Gorbachev. OTRAG did buy a compound inside of the Congo, and that became, according to Gorbachev, West Germany's Area 51.
Right.
They were working on cruise missiles and bioweapons and so on, which is interesting because, lo and behold, during this Ukrainian war thing, what did we hear talk of? Well, West Germany might or might not sell its cruise missiles to the Ukraine. Wait a minute.
Well, yeah.
I thought West Germany wasn't supposed to have those kinds of things. What are they doing with cruise missiles? You know, so when you factor that in, and Musk's relationship to South Africa, his business ties, his interest in space, and so on. Yeah, I think you're looking at some sort of OTRAG version 2. Paperclip version 3.0,
That's incredible.
We've got our German rocket scientist again. Yeah, right. Go back to the moon.
Fascinating. Davis and OTRAG, what happened there? They hired him as a consultant.
He became a member of the board, which indicates, in other words, he had a significant stock portfolio or equity interest in the company.
Wow.
So, my question is, why would you court Kurt Davis, who is not a rocket scientist, to be part of a company trying to develop cheap rocket transports?
It's very strange. Like the UFO part, it's very
ding,
strange.
Ding, 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 ding. So that Davis's mere presence in OTRAG is what tells me. Yeah, Mikhail Gorbachev probably had something going for his intelligence. This was more than just a rocket company.
Yeah, exactly. When does he set off that warning? Is it the 1980s?
I believe it was shortly after Reykjavik.
Yes.
Or before. It was 88 to 89 in that time frame. I don't remember exactly when in terms of the summits that he was holding with Reagan, but it was I seem to recall that it was before they inked that deal that they signed in, what was it, 89 or 90, somewhere around then.
Yes.
It was before the real final death throes and moans of the Soviet Union, during the perestroika, glasnost. But he did say it.
Which were the first actual nuclear arms reductions, which is quite an accomplishment in that period. Actually, at a certain point, they come out of one of the summits and they say, we discussed a zero options of no nuclear weapons anywhere for either of us, which is still hangs out there in history. But of course, when you get around that period, Joseph, things are leaking there. Yep. Something's going on with the UFO file.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's interesting because Gorbachev will say later about Reykjavik, that was the summit. But what's interesting, if you notice, if you go back to the reporting of that day, they'll say, oh, it was the biggest bomb of a summit. Nothing was agreed upon. And it was a disaster. Well, Gorbachev says, no, that's when we sat down and talked.
Yes.
So this is the crucial one in his mind. And that's the one later we find out where they discussed the UFO file.
He said to me, what would you do if the United States were attacked by someone from outer space? Would you help us? I said, no doubt about it. He said, we too.
Yeah, that summit, I'm in agreement with you. I don't think that summit was the failure. I think the significance of that summit to this day has been entirely missed. Entirely missed. And we're seeing real evidence of it now, if you know what to look for. Because neither the United States nor the Soviet Union, or what would become the Russian Federation, neither one of those countries are going to endanger their national security just to have a zero strategic option.
Right.
They're not going to do that. So what that summit always indicated to me is both sides got down to real brass tacks and admitted all the secret stuff that they each had.
Mm-hmm.
That made all those nuclear ICBMs and missiles obsolescent at best.
Yeah.
At best. Let's remember what has happened since the Reykjavik summit, because that summit, Daniel, again, I think you're right. That summit is the first incident in a timeline of indicators that they have much more in their inventory than they're letting on.
Amazing. Yeah. Yeah, there's no question about it. And that's 35 years ago.
That's 35 years ago. So let's look at the timeline since then. We have Mr. Trump during his first administration and the difficulties with Kim Jong-un in North Korea. And we had that public, very, very staged press conference with the American general and the American reporter. And the reporter asks him in a voice clear enough to be heard above the din of the crowd, "General, when you say all options are on the table, does that include kinetic weapons?" And his answer is yes. Now, kinetic can be interpreted as simply the use of heavy ordnance. In other words, are you going to go to a kinetic option? Are you going to really use munitions? Right, but kinetic can also mean rod of God technology.
Yes.
Around that same time period, we had the explosion at the Tianjin chemical plant.
Oh, right.
Outside of Beijing. And I swear to this day, I am not going to be convinced that that was a chemical explosion simply by the signature of the crater left in the ground beneath the plant.
Unbelievable.
The crater is narrow, conical, and deep. Had that been a chemical explosion, even contained inside the building, it would not have had a hollow charge effect like what we see in that crater. It would have been a much shallower crater with a much wider dispersion. That's not what we see.
You think it's a rod of God demonstration?
I think there is a very, very good possibility that that was a rod of God signature that somebody used on that plant.
Wow.
Because the sheer kinetic energy of that, of an impact like that, will create a chemical reaction like that. So that's another indicator. We then had Mr. Trump in both administrations saying, well, we don't even need nuclear weapons. We've got things you wouldn't believe, you know. And right. He's said things like this on more than one occasion.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
All right. Then we have Mr. Trump's very weird statement out in California when he went out to announce the creation of the Space Force. We need, and his words, not mine, his, we need another Space Force.
Right.
Whoa.
Yeah.
We already had one.
Right, yeah.
What was the first one? The kind of Space Coast Guard? Now we have to have a Space Navy? You know, what's going on here, Don?
Right.
So, yeah, we've had all these indicators. Then, let's not forget the Russians.
Mm-hmm.
Dmitry Medvedev, to this day, I don't think people get the significance of what he said. 1 month before the Chelyabinsk meteor incident back in, I think, 2011, Dmitry Medvedev got on Russian television and he was talking about the danger of asteroids and that Russia wanted to get the world together to build out a planetary defense system against asteroids.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can't get everybody on board, well, we're just going to have to go ahead and do it ourselves.
Right. Yeah.
Okay? And the Russian reporter, very nice, pretty lady, says, well, Mr. Prime Minister, can you tell us, well, how would we take out the asteroids, you know, if there was a threat? And he said, oh, you know, we could use our thermonuclear missiles and use it to blow them up or divert their orbit path. And then he goes on to say, and we've got other ways we could do it.
Yeah.
like what, Dmitry? And then a month later, what happens? You have the Chelyabinsk meteor, which is filmed by Russian cars, because over there you have to, by law, have video cameras in your cars for insurance.
Right.
So this meteor is filmed zipping over Chelyabinsk, a major Russian nuclear city, by the way. And in the flight pattern of the meteor, what you see on some of these videos is one of these little orbs again, kind of following along behind. And then the meteor explodes, orb is gone.
Wow.
You know?
Yeah.
So, again, there's a something going on here. And then there's one final incident that I'll tick off in this timeline of weird stuff. And, again, this is after the Reagan-Gorbachev-Reykjavik summit. Okay, all of what I'm saying is after that summit.
Right.
And all of it's indicating they've got something and they ain't telling us.
Mm-hmm.
This final one is, remember the satellite collision about 10 to 12 years ago of the Russian and American satellite?
Very strange.
Very, yeah. Russian and American satellites don't collide with each other.
Right.
Okay. Both countries are fairly competent in being able to keep their satellites from colliding with other satellites. Both countries have the technology to make satellites move and change their orbits.
Mm-hmm.
Now, neither country is admitting to the fact or acknowledging that they diverted their satellites to collide with the other country's satellite.
Mm.
Which means somebody pushed those satellites together and has the technology to do that. Maybe it's one of those two countries that did it. Maybe both countries decided to test a commonly held technology. Who knows? But the fact of the incident itself indicates that there's a technology that allowed them to do that and to do it with. And here's the key point I'm trying to make here. It's not the technology of colliding a satellite. It's the technology of being able to do it with that kind of precision.
Right. Right.
That's a lot of space up there to be colliding something that's 9 feet in diameter.
Remarkable. Yeah. Wow. And that's the kind of technology that they're incorporating into the Golden Dome.
Bingo.
Yeah.
It's called target direction.
Yes.
That fire control.
Talk about advanced weaponry. My God. The weapons uses on something like that.
Exactly. Exactly.
No. Joseph, I'm going to draw us back again to this Huntsville piece just to complete the circle. And I just want to do the crisscross on the paperclip Huntsville part as a kind of a closing piece on this. This is fantastic. I want to go back to the scientist, Amy Eskridge, who passed away tragically in 2022. As I mentioned, she was in charge of the Institute for Exotic Science, and her dad had worked on a number of projects for NASA for years, for decades. A lot of his papers are available, and then others not so available. Mm-hmm. But one of the things, and she also had done a number of kind of loosey-goosey interviews before the end, in one of them saying that her family were paper clippers. And she said also, and this is a quote, that Huntsville is the biggest secret you've never heard of, and we're going to reveal it. We're going to let it out. She said a number of odd things. One of the deaths that she pointed out was McClandish's death, and that when he had died the year previously in April of 2021, she said he had refused to go along with it or something to that degree. So it's indicating that she didn't believe the official story around McCandlish's death.
Oh, I don't either.
Yeah. And he, of course, the digital illustrator with incredible access to the Air Force, gave us the information on the flux liner, the alien reproduction vehicle, those marvelous sketches that he put across, and his deep, deep connections. I mean, this guy was really into it. He was in Huntsville a month before giving a speech. Now, before his death. And then she comes off and she's saying, you know, all these agents and stuff are around me all of a sudden, and people from the counterintelligence field, you know, like the Hal Putoffs and the Lou Elizondos, they're right around in the background trying to squeeze me into these different projects and saying, you know, we want to get to that anti-gravity stuff before China does, and so on. And she tells some very interesting tales, including the fact that when she said, okay, I have somebody who's involved from the Army who can participate in these discussions, and she has people like Elizondo and Putoff completely ending communications the minute she said Army, which I found was interesting. But in any case, she dies under suspicious circumstances after pointing out again the importance of Huntsville. We have the Moffett deaths, of course. Before that, going all the way back to a case you and I have talked about before, the case of Ning Li and her incredible anti-gravity experiments, and then getting run over by a car and becoming basically, you know, mentally a mental vegetable as a result of that. What is it that we're looking at with this overhang? And you did touch upon it, but I want you to kind of just peer into it and tell me, what is the overhang from Paperclip now, the original bringing of the Nazi scientists into Huntsville, that incredible expanse that creates the regular space program, and as we know, the secondary secret space program, which is something that Kennedy saw as a big danger in his administration. And then, you know, getting to the moon and all the rest of it, the incredible glory around Huntsville. But there's something lurking in the back there. And she, as being part of the missing or dead scientists in this case, is pointing it out. She's giving us this hint. Well, it's all right here.
Wow, that's a question. And I've thought a lot about that question, not that specifically phrased. And I've come down to basically two speculative answers that I've kind of danced around. But I'll just come right out and say it. The first possibility is my good old friend, the Nazi International. And what I mean by that is this. If you look at its evolution in the immediate years after the war, as I said, there are certain spots, I mentioned them earlier in this interview, you know, South America. All those spots that I listed as centers of activity, Huntsville being one of them. One of the things that was commented upon by the American observers of the paperclip Nazis within the space program, particularly in the early years before there was a NASA, when all of those Nazis are working for the U.S. Air Force, the U.S. Army, you know, and so on and so forth. During that period, the American observers, and particularly Army counterintelligence, observed that these paperclip Nazis not only were keeping their chain of command, but they were also acting and behaving in ways that indicated that they were in touch and contact with their comrades around the world in some form or fashion. For example, Linda Hunt mentions in her book that American counterintelligence had followed the paperclip Nazis based in El Paso across the border into Mexico, where they had dead drops in the local post offices.
Oh, right, right.
Okay. In addition to that, it became clear that to the American counterintelligence that they had access to much more sophisticated and much wider ranging means of communication, but they didn't know what it was. I know what it was. Because Walter Schellenberger, the head of the Sicherheitsdienst, in 1944 turned over the entire Bolivar transmitter system to Juan Perón. Now, if you don't know what the Bolivar transmitter system was, it was all those shortwave radio transmitters that Nazi Germany's intelligence, the party intelligence apparatus, had spread throughout Latin America from Mexico all the way down to Argentina. So there was a network of transmitters all throughout Latin America, shortwave, that were turned over to Juan Perón, and therefore, I think, ultimately, to the post-war Nazi International. That's how they coordinate their activity. Mm. So in other words, you have effectively elements of the SS, elements of the Sicherheitsdienst that are present as veterans throughout Latin America. They're the ones, incidentally, as we know from Henrik Kruger's book, The Great Heroin Coup, they're the ones that train the drug cartels in their security procedures. So there's a direct Nazi link to the current drug cartel problem in Latin America.
Incredible funding source.
A funding source, there's, you know, security training, all of that. So this organization, like it or not, is alive and well.
And would now, you say the Bolivar aspect could represent a kind of emergency network of communication that others can't get?
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. But what all this implies in terms of Huntsville is that not only did they reproduce the chain of command, they also reproduced the machinery of obedience. Yeah. Cooperate or you will die, or your family will die, you know, whatever. We know how they operate.
Yes.
And that would be a big, bad, nasty, dark secret all of its own. So we might be watching evidence of that. The other possibility, that's possibility number one. The other possibility, which I don't think is at all in a kind of hermetically sealed compartment, untouched by the first one, okay? In other words, they can bleed into each other. The other possibility is you have what Richard Hoagland called the magicians. You know, he had the three groups inside of NASA for Richard Hoagland in his book.
Oh, yeah, yes.
Were Masons, magicians, and Nazis. Okay.
Yes.
I think that there is, if you look at space itself, just think of the Artemis II mission and all the mythological connotations of that, particularly in terms of Egyptian mythology. Look at the name Ellen, particularly in connection to Wernher von Braun's novel, Das Marsprojekt, where yes. The hero of the Martian Federation is a guy who happens to be named Ellen. you know, gee, what a coincidence.
That is the Elon that's going to run Mars.
Yeah, that's the Elon that's going to run Mars. You can't tell me that this naming was not deliberate. Can't.
And he writes it and puts it out in 1949.
Yeah.
And, you know, we get this guy coming on the scene some 70 years later.
Yeah. So I think you have a group that has looked at the space program as an opportunity to practice real honest to goodness celestial magic of the black magic kind on a celestial scale.
Incredible.
And the reason I think that they're doing that is they, not so much that they are real genuine, you know, Aleister Crowley occultists in the Jack Parsons Jet Propulsion Laboratory sense, but rather, you know, you've got that element, certainly.
True Thelemites?
Yeah, I think there probably are people like
sure.
that. But I think probably what you're really dealing with in terms of the magicians are good old-fashioned American materialists. We'll try anything just to see if, okay, let's try this way of communicating and see if there's any sort of response.
Oh,
you know,
yes.
It's the old
opportunist.
Yeah, it's the old materialist magician of C.S. Lewis that you have running a lot of these things, and that's their basic philosophy. When the actual thing shows up, then they get all nervous and worried. Oh well, we weren't expecting right. that. You know, well, duh. You know,
and if anything, they kill the true believers like Parsons.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
When they're done with him, they're like, "Oh, just take him out in an explosion. Come on."
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So.
And I hate to say it. I mean, is he part of the original missing scientists, dead scientists list?
Could be. You know, at this stage, I don't put anything past these people. So I think that's the second possibility that you might be looking at. And as I say, the two are not mutually exclusive.
Right.
You know, you had Heinrich Himmler, and, you know, he was a full-blown occultist in the fullest sense of the word. And his immediate subordinate is Hans Kammler, and he's a thoroughgoing, practical, pragmatic guy.
Mm.
Like it or not, that's what he is. So it's just a very, very strange mentality, and it's all kind of nestled and nesting there in Huntsville, like it or not.
And the
bottom line, and you and I both know this, Daniel, the bottom line is you can't have an ideology as insane and nutty as Nazism and just expect it to die overnight and not be passed down. It just, you know, that's not the way these ideologies work. They are, in the fullest sense of the word, they're cults.
So you're saying you're looking at generations of scientific dictatorship with the same kind of martial philosophy.
Yep.
But in these groups, you know, I've referred to things like X-Protect, protecting the secrecy around the UFO file. And you're saying it's protecting the physics also.
Sure. I mean, these kinds of ideologies don't die overnight. They just don't. You know, we're naive if we think that they do. That's just not the nature of evil. It doesn't do that. It will find a way to propagate itself, and it will find a way to propagate its power and to continue its power monopoly. So absolutely, you know.
Wow. Incredible power center there for their activities. It's funny. I went back into the history around JFK and Huntsville just to see what his own opinions were on it. And, you know, he shows up in Rocket City and gives a speech, but you know who's painfully absent is the governor. Governor Wallace show up to give the speech with him, which is highly unusual. And Kennedy does not comment on the politics of the day there going on, but he does speak about, you know, the incredible things that can be accomplished with NASA and all the rest of it. But he makes sure to go there. I thought that was interesting.
Particularly at that time, absolutely.
Absolutely. Wow, incredible. It's fascinating. Now, I just want to say this, because it's in the heart of your work, and it comes directly out of your Roswell and the Reich book. And I'm feeling this kind of Roswell, Huntsville, missing scientist overlap that is just, mm-hmm. you know, and it's something terribly missed when I've spoken to the mainstream, you know, and there's a chance here. I'm speaking now with Vanity Fair. Maybe they're going to pick up on this, but I want them to get this and take these facts to the public, even in their own, you know, commercial vein, whatever it happens to be. But if we go into Albuquerque and we see McCasland, General McCasland, mm-hmm. Major General, going missing, Joseph, on his level, especially since through the WikiLeaks emails being leaked in 2016, and we know about this, mm-hmm. on his level, isn't that a national security crisis, the fact that he's missing?
Absolutely, it's a national security crisis, and that's what grabs me about his disappearance in particular. It's not being handled that way. And let's remember something. And this may be a bit of history that I don't know about you, Daniel, but I just get the absolute sense or feeling, intuition, I don't know what to call it, that there's some sort of profound connection between the McCasland case and the Paul Benowitz case.
Oh, wow. Yes.
Because that also occurred in Albuquerque, yep. at the same Air Force base. Mm-hmm. We know that there was something going on that the Air Force was, you know, Richard Doty and that whole controversy with the Benowitz affair.
The UFO disinformation, you know, UFO it kind of set the template for it. Yeah,
it set the template for a lot of stuff. And I get the feeling that there's some sort of connection there, because Benowitz clearly was taking pictures of them testing, you know, a laser,
yeah.
at Kirtland, using phase conjugation, optical phase conjugation,
right.
And at that time, you know, that's some of the most sensitive. It still is some of the most sensitive technology for directed energy weapon research. So they were going out of their way. But then out of the Benowitz affair, you have all these other stories about strange things that Greg Bishop, I think, was the guy that wrote the book.
Oh, yes. Benowitz
affair. And Greg told me on one occasion that he had been riding around the airbase and literally seen doors and things that you do not see on Google Maps displays. It's as if
fascinating. Yeah.
Some sort of invisibility technology for some of this.
Incredible.
Stuff.
Yeah.
It's just weird, you know. So McCasland disappearing, coming out of that airbase, I'm not buying it.
What is the pattern with them leaving behind their phones, leaving behind their glasses, leaving behind their wallets? And in some of these cases, you know, there was a scientist up here who I think is also connected with this, named Jason Thomas, but he worked for Novartis. Uh-huh. When he disappeared, he left his smartwatch in the mailbox for his uh-huh. wife to find. These are people, it seems like, are operating a protocol that says you're being called to this emergency meeting, leave all your possessions, leave all your electronic tracking devices yes. behind at home.
It is a protocol. That was the first thing that occurred to me, was it's a protocol to get rid of anything that might have the potential of containing any sort of tracking device or any sort of listening device on it. Just get rid of it. It's suggestive. It's highly suggestive that's a first layer protocol, that at some point these people may have been taken to a place where their clothes were changed, their appearance changed. You know, it may be a multi-layered protocol thing that we're looking at. That's why this whole thing is so weird.
Yes.
It struck me that very same way. And the other thing that I find very weird about it, Daniel, is the kind of, I don't know about you, in McCasland's case alone, as you've pointed out, that's a national security issue. In fact, yes. I blogged about it and said basically the same thing.
Yeah.
So why is the reaction so tepid?
Yes.
It's that pot should be boiling.
No question.
And we don't see anything. There, at the minimum, you would think that there would be an occasional alert on television or radio. Have you seen this man? If so, you know, here's the description, call such and such a number. We're not seeing any of that.
No. And he disappeared in this very tiny corridor of time between when his wife goes, she's going to the doctor somewhere, and she comes back within an hour. In that time, a workman at the house has seen him. So he does it in this little window. He disappears entirely, and they can't trace him at all. Nothing. That's very coordinated, it seems.
That's coordinated, and it suggests there may be another protocol in play that these people might be receiving some kind of signal.
Right.
Time to ditch, bail out now. Meet at such and such. You know, there's so much about this is fishy.
No question.
Joseph, just amazing. Stay right there and we'll record a second hour just for Dark Journalist subscribers to get right in their inbox shortly. If you're not a subscriber, you can go directly to darkjournalist.com or follow the link in the description of this video. Of course, all of Joseph's latest work is available at GizaDeathStar.com. Please join us at 8 p.m. on Friday nights for the Dark Journalist X series. See you soon.